Bellevue Hospital on New York City's East Side occupies a colorful and horrifying place in the public imagination, a den of mangled crime victims, vicious psychopaths, assorted derelicts, lunatics, and exotic disease sufferers. In its 2.5 centuries of service, there was hardly an epidemic or social catastrophe or groundbreaking scientific advance that did not touch Bellevue. David Ashinsky, whose last book, Polio, An American Story, was awarded a Pulitzer Prize, chronicles the history of America's oldest hospital and in doing so also charts the rise of New York to the nation's preeminent city, the path of American medicine from butchery and quackery to a professional and scientific endeavor, and the growth of a civic institution. The name of his book is Bellevue, 3 Centuries of Medicine and Mayhem at America's Most Storied Hospital. And it's a great pleasure to welcome David Ashinsky to the roundtable this morning. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you here. What brought you to want to write about this storied place?
I'm a New Yorker. I grew up in Queens, New York, and this was during the baby boom era, right after World War II. And Bellevue was by far the most famous hospital in New York City. And at that time, it was widely known as kind of for its mental facilities. And I can remember listening to Jackie Gleason and so many other shows where they said, keep it up and you're going to Bellevue. And I remember my parents actually threatening me with that, that it was this dark psychiatric hospital. So I always had a sense of it, a feeling about it. And as I became more interested in medical history, I realized that Bellevue was the oldest public hospital in the United States. It had seen every epidemic, every immigrant group, every advance in public health and medicine. And it had a history that went well beyond the psychiatric history that most people are familiar with.
This dates back, the hospital dates back, the roots of it, to 1738. So we're talking a very long time.
That is correct. It it began as part of the poorhouse in New York City and had been used for years as the kind of place where when an epidemic took place and people were very, very frightened and wanted to separate those who were sick from those who weren't, they would just transfer them to Bellevue. Bellevue's on the East River, as you know, in New York City. And this was a time in the 1700s where the entire city was down at the Battery. It was, you know, very, very much at what we call the tip of Manhattan now. And Bellevue was 2 miles to the northeast and therefore was way out in the country. So it was like you sent them there and you forgot about them and they died.
Yeah, that is where you went to die. And it was often synonymous with that, wasn't it?
It was. Bellevue always took care from the very beginning of those who had no other better options. If you were very poor and very sick, if you had no family, if you were homeless, Bellevue was the place where you were sent. And it had that reputation. Over the years, it also gained a reputation as an extraordinarily effective hospital. And one of the reasons for this was not only did physicians in this era have kind of a Christian duty to the poor, but they also believed they could do all kinds of experiments and surgery on uncomplaining bodies, on poor bodies, people who really had no other options. So it became a kind of mecca for the very best physicians in the United States. So you had this kind of odd dichotomy of terrific physicians and poor, uncomplaining patients.
Was there a mission, that sense of mission to treat the poor of New York, and did that ever go up against directly that darker side where the poor were considered useful subjects for these experiments?
That's a very good question. And the answer is it really did. I think that when you, if you were a cholera victim in the 1830s, or you had tuberculosis, if you were Irish, German, Italian, Jewish, coming through as immigrants, you knew that at bottom, Bellevue was going to have a bed for you, that it was going to turn no one away, that there were private hospitals in New York City that were for the elite. Bellevue was not for the elite, but Bellevue had an ethos that everyone was treated and everyone would get the best possible treatment as well. So it had a reputation on the one hand as sort of the Grim Reaper, but on the other hand as a place where you were going to get fine medical care.
So as these experiments went on and medical discoveries were made, Bellevue really became a place where it was filled with doctors who knew what they were doing.
Oh, it did. Bellevue was probably the most competitive teaching hospital in the country. Interns and residents would apply from everywhere to be at Bellevue because they knew they would see everything. There was no disease, there was no condition that wouldn't come through the doors of this hospital. So they knew that if they were going out, even into private practice afterwards, they were going to have one heck of an education. And what you get, you look at the people who came through Bellevue's doors. I mean, Walter Reed of yellow fever fame, Salk and Sabin, who created the two polio vaccines. The list really goes on and on. It was really an extraordinary training ground.
When that training ground became known, it didn't seem to really change the idea, the perception that people had about Bellevue, did it? I mean, you were talking about the shows that would talk about Bellevue. I mean, right. I remember growing up and watching Barney Miller, and they would always refer to Bellevue. So never really.
Barney Miller, you're absolutely right. It was one TV show after another. One movie after another. I mean, Lost Weekend with Ray Milland, which won the Academy Award in the 1940s, was about Bellevue's alcoholic ward. Miracle on 34th Street, you know, Kris Kringle, of all people, is seen as crazy and brought to Bellevue for evaluation. Parts of The Godfather were filmed there because of its grimness. So it does have that tremendous hold on popular culture, you know, one famous patient after another. But the other thing about Bellevue that is remarkable is if a cop gets shot in New York City, Bellevue is where he goes or she goes. You know, if a firefighter is overcome by smoke, it's Bellevue. When a worker falls off a, you know, construction site, Bellevue is the place. And even if the Pope or the President, God forbid, were to get sick in New York City, Bellevue's emergency services await. So it is. There's really this dichotomy that it is the poor. Most of its patients, even today, are many of them are homeless and undocumented and uninsured. But it also provides emergency medical care for the very elite of the country.
You do write in the book two presidents, right? That were taken to Bellevue.
Yes. During the 19th century, actually, four American presidents were treated by Bellevue doctors. I have one chapter on the first physician to reach Abraham Lincoln at Ford's Theater was a Bellevue graduate 3 or 4 months out of medical school in 1865, and he did everything he could to save Lincoln's life, which was quite impossible. But, you know, there was some good and there was some bad. I mean, you can make an argument that President Garfield, who was assassinated but took several months to die, President Garfield would not have died if the two bullets had just been left there and his body had been left alone. But it was the probing of dirty fingers and dirty instruments into the bullet wounds of Garfield that basically killed him. Of infection, and those were Bellevue doctors, or at least the main doctor was a Bellevue doctor who was treating him. And Grover Cleveland was treated in a secret operation for mouth cancer, and it was secret because it was during the 1893 Depression, and he did not want his critics to know that he was ill, and he did not want to panic the country. And he was taken on a yacht up the East River into the Long Island Sound, where in a 90-minute operation, the cancer was successfully removed from his mouth by Bellevue doctors. So this is really an extraordinary hospital.
You do point out in the book that it dealt with pretty much anything that came through New York City. So whether it was cholera in the early 1800s or tuberculosis with Jews and the Italians around the turn of the century and the great influenza epidemics. But you focus, and this really surprised me, Bellevue treated more AIDS patients than any other hospital in the country.
That is true, and I think more AIDS patients died at Bellevue than any other hospital in the country. There were other New York hospitals that were, like St. Vincent's, that were very, very courageous during the AIDS epidemic, but Bellevue was ground zero. And what you had to do was first, you know, there is a Bellevue ethos that we treat everybody, but these were patients who were coming in with a disease that was fatal. No one knew what caused it. No one knew who was how it was transmitted. And you really had to go to great lengths to get the medical staff to be convinced that the ethos of Bellevue was to turn no one away, including these patients. And they did that. There was some contention. There were arguments over whether AIDS was, doctors were learning anything in their training. They were doing more, looking at more AIDS patients than influenza patients in these years. So the question was, what does a doctor learn when every patient dies? What the doctors learned was compassion, and the nurses. The nursing staff was fantastic. And finally, over time, and at Bellevue, they began to discover the three-drug cocktail that basically turned AIDS into a manageable condition. So what happened during the 1980s was extraordinary. And one of the things you have to remember is if you're a 25-year-old resident or intern working at Bellevue, you are dealing with AIDS patients who are no older than you are. You are dealing with your contemporaries and watching them die. And it had an enormous emotional impact on the staff at Bellevue, but in the end, they prevailed.
Is Bellevue's story the story of so many hospitals across the country, of what they are dealing with and continue to deal with as far as finances and security?
I think the answer is probably yes. Bellevue, I would consider to be the great flagship of America's public hospitals. And, you know, you have for-profit hospitals, you have not-for-profit hospitals, and then you have the public system. And the public system largely deals with those the other hospitals don't want in the long term. And, you know, the bottom line is that if you are a drug addict or you have HIV or you are undocumented, there are not that many hospitals that really want you. And there are not that many cities that are willing to put the money in. I mean, these are not people who are voters. They do not have large constituencies behind them. They're poor, they're isolated, they often have severe mental problems. And you know, it really takes, I think, a kind of political courage for a city to decide that we need these kinds of hospitals for the poorest of the poor, that everyone is going to receive some sort of emergency medical care and even beyond, regardless of the ability to pay. And if I may add something, what I may say is that the health of these people, regardless of what you may feel about having undocumented immigrants in the country, these are people who make our sandwiches, who wash our dishes, who work in childcare centers, who are nannies. Our health depends on their health. We are all in this together. You know, if one group does not receive medical care, everybody in society can suffer. It's more than an issue of compassion. It's really an issue of public health.
The name of the book, Bellevue, Three Centuries of Medicine and Mayhem at America's Most Storied Hospital. David Oshinsky, I thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Bellevue, Three Centuries of Medicine and Mayhem at America's Most Storied Hospital. David Oshinsky is the author. It is published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.